from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Every California fourth grader knows the story of Father Junipero Serra, the Franciscan priest who came north from Mexico in 1769 to launch the mission system that came to define and shape California. He's up for sainthood in the Catholic Church and up for scrutiny in a new history. This hour on Point, Father Junipero Serra, imperial priest and California's founding father. You can join us online, on air, where this conversation is always on. Do you know this story, its glory and its cost? Is this the Christopher Columbus of California? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. All those missions, they sort of define California in our historical memory. There are things we may not be remembering. Here's a little bit from the one he made his headquarters in Carmel. The mission there, this was July of this year, the bells of the mission where our Franciscan father traveled so many years ago. This is the 300th anniversary of his birth, 250 years or so since he was there in California, laying out his vision of a future that left a lot out and gave birth to a lot. Joining me now from Pasadena, California, Stephen Hackle, professor of history at the University of California, Riverside, scholar of the early history of California and its missions. His new history, and it is a fascinating read, is titled Junipero Serra, California's Founding Father. Stephen Hackle, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
It's great to have you here. Every school child knows this story. What's the version that they tend to know? You go deep, but what's the kind of the story that Californian children are handed about this fascinating man?
Well, there are about 300,000 fourth graders in California every year. And as part of the state's social science standards, they do study California missions and Junipero Serra's life. And the story they get is one that many of us, when we were growing up in California, got. For the most part, is that Junipero Serra was a noble, gentle padre who established a set of missions about a day's ride apart for weary travelers. And for most people, California Indians are not central to the story that they learn in their schools today. But as you know, Indians, of course, were central to those missions, and part of the new history, and in turn, certainly in my book, puts Indians at the center of those missions.
I can imagine people listening and thinking, well, okay, everybody's got their ancient history, so what? What's it matter? What's it have to do with how what we see in California today? My mind was blown by how much of California we see today was shaped by this one man 250 years ago, Stephen.
Well, Junipero Serra had an enormous personality, a tremendously powerful vision for California. He wanted to establish a set of missions in California, not a day's ride apart, but certainly that would cover most of the state between what is now San Diego and just north of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And what he wanted was a place where Indians would work year-round agriculturally and come to Mass and pray according to Roman Catholicism and its beliefs. And in some ways, he was successful in that, in the sense that today California does have 11 million Catholics, and the missions, the 21 of them, he established between 6 and 9, depending on how you count. But those missions are still functioning parishes, and they're sort of the spine of a very vibrant Catholicism in California today. And also, if you... Excuse me.
Yes, go ahead.
Also, if you look at the military garrisons established under Serra's during his period in California, and the pueblos, those are also very important for California today, Monterey in particular. But I think more importantly, in terms of how California was remade as a place, Serra had the powerful agricultural vision that people had to work as European farmers in California to be civilized. And with that vision came a series of plants and animals that essentially led to an ecological revolution in California. So if you think of California hillsides with dry grass and oak trees, that's a landscape that really emerges during the colonial period, in part due to Serra's vision of how people, Indians, should live in California.
I mean, it's sort of an astonishing vision that you paint. This one man with a bum leg from a snake bite in Mexico, where he had a lot of experience already along these lines, walks and rides on a mule and maybe does some sailing, but into California and ends up, in his influence at least, almost completely changing both the population and the very landscape of this enormous terrain.
Well, Serra, of course, is a symbol for what occurred during the colonial period. I mean, he was one of essentially dozens of padres who worked, Franciscans who worked in California in the colonial period. But he is, one could say, the most articulate spokesperson for a complete revolution in California in terms of lifestyle, in terms of how people lived, how they prayed, and how they worked. And, you know, we shouldn't go too far. Of course, California Indians had their own beliefs and customs that they maintained throughout the colonial period and that many still practice today. But there's no question that with Serra, a huge revolution came to California, and it's one that shaped our state today in terms of where people live today. Much of the architecture dates to the mission period, and in fact, many of our buildings and schools carry Junipero Serra's name.
Let's look at the land and the people. People first. Describe the change, if you would, from the Native Americans who were there and what was Spain was calling New Spain, Alta California, their way of life, and the radical transformation envisioned by and in no small part implemented by Junipero Serra.
Well, one of the things I do try and capture in the book is the fact that California, even though Serra imagined it as a place inhabited by poor, naked people who could hardly feed themselves, California Indians were among the most successful indigenous peoples in the Americas in terms of making a living where they lived. There were roughly 300,000 Indians in California who lived in hundreds of separate villages. And what the Spaniards did, particularly under Serra, was try and concentrate Indian peoples into a few settlements adjacent to missions where they would live a life that was much, that was based upon a European model of agriculture.
You say that lightly, but that was a radical transformation.
It was a radical transformation because California Indians relied upon hundreds and hundreds of different plants and animals that they cultivated through the use of fire. And what Serra does is he says, well, fire's not the way you manage the land. You manage the land through irrigation, through planting fields in mission settlements. And this meant that over a period of 30, 40, 50 years, California Indians did move from hundreds and hundreds of villages into smaller settlements, a smaller number of settlements in the missions.
And to be clear, managing it by fire was not farming in anything like we think of farming. They didn't have European-style agriculture. They didn't, and many of them did not want it, nor did they want the mores he brought on sexuality and many fronts. I mean, he saw it as for their good, but he envisioned entirely taking over their way of life.
Well, I think that's true in some aspects. I mean, Serra wanted Indians to live at missions year-round, not in villages dispersed throughout the countryside. He wanted Indians to practice Catholicism. He wanted them to marry and not divorce and keep maintaining their sexual relations simply in the marriage. But Serra was, in some ways, pragmatic. He knew that Indians overnight would not give up all they had known for millennia. And so in some ways, he certainly tolerated native practices in the missions in terms of gathering certain foods, in terms of the songs they sang, in terms of the dances they performed. There were elements of Indian life that the Spaniards valued and saw were central to any missions they wanted to create.
Elements, no doubt, but I mean, you describe, you know, where they lived changed. How their economy turned upside down, their own values or moral system rejected, and if they resisted, if they tried to run away, they'd be brought back on occasion. If they resisted, they could be beaten, whipped.
This is all true. The Franciscans believe that the California Indians were children, that they were their spiritual children, and that they had the intellectual abilities of small children. So they took it upon themselves, and we don't condone this today, of course, to restructure native life as a parent would do in Mallorca, where Serra was born. So Serra viewed himself as the father, literally, of Indians baptized in the missions. And if these children strayed, they would be punished corporally, just as a child would be in Mallorca, where Serra was born.
They brought with them European-style livestock, which, once it got going, changed the California topography, the flora and fauna, certainly. How so?
Well, sheep, horses, cattle trampled native subsistence economies, simply destroying the underbrush, destroying many of the plants that California Indians used to produce their baskets, their foods, and to really maintain their lifestyle. And the European model of agriculture with its support system of various crops and animals simply was not, it simply destroyed what existed in California before.
And what came in behind was not all those hundreds of villages, but instead very large ranches and the sort of hacienderos, the rancheros.
Well, that's really comes many, many years later during the Mexican period, in the 1830s and 40s. Mm-hmm. But there's no question that with Serra, there is the beginnings of private land holdings in California among favored soldiers and settlers. That is very true. Tom, one of the things we haven't talked about, of course, is disease. And that's a central component of colonization during the Spanish period.
Crowd everybody around the missions, bring in the Europeans, and here it comes.
Here it comes. Much of that had to do with the fact that Indians were concentrated into these smaller settlements where disease was much more prevalent and much more lethal than in the colonial period.
Of course, it would take decades, but as that arc ran its course, that population of Native Americans in California that he came to save vastly diminished. He's up for sainthood. Others look and say, maybe not. Behind us right here, from the Santa Clara Mission, one of those founded by Father Junipero Serra, vocal ensemble that you might have heard back in the 18th, 19th centuries. Stephen Hackle writes about all this great and disturbing California history in his new book, Junipero Serra, California's Founding Father. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about California's original architect, imperial priest, Junipero Serra, and his deep stamp, for better and worse, on America's most populous state. Behind us here, the ringing of the bells from the Festival of the Bells just last year. This is from the Mission San Diego Alcala, California's first mission, founded by Junipero Serra, 1769. Stephen Hackle writes the really interesting story in his new big, wonderful history, Junipero Serra, California's Founding Father. There's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org, and he joins us today from Pasadena, California. Stephen Hackle, just getting the feeling for where he came from, his path to California, brings the history alive in so many ways. As you say, born in Mallorca, the big island, of course, in the Mediterranean, east of Spain. Ended up with the Franciscans in Mexico with a lot of responsibility there. The mission system in California, hardly the first he saw. He moved in behind the Jesuits in Baja California, where many missions had laid out and had led to uprising and rebellion before he came north, Stephen.
Well, Serra, one of the things that people don't understand usually about California, about Serra, is he was 55 when he came to California.
Yeah.
And he had a long and very consequential life in Mallorca as a priest and then a professor, and then for 20 years in central Mexico. And by the time he gets to California, he has almost two decades of experience as an administrator and many, many years experience working with Indians who were very different, actually. When he gets to California, he meets Indians who haven't heard the gospel, who hadn't been preached to in Spanish. But in central Mexico, he works with Indian peoples, actually, who have had many generations of experience with Franciscans. In Mexico, he also works as an agent for the Inquisition, as a field investigator for the Mexican Inquisition. And that was part of the responsibility of most Franciscans who held a lot of authority in the New World. They were charged with investigating people who seemed to be living lives that were heretical or dangerous to the larger community.
So he'd seen this before. He represented Spain in a way, but these orders represented themselves very, very powerfully. The Franciscans, he saw himself laying out a kind of a Franciscan world, and he relied on soldiers, but also fought with secular Spanish officials.
There's a real irony to Serra's life, because in Mallorca, during his childhood and early adulthood, the Bourbons essentially establish Mallorca as one of their colonies, and they use it to increase their power elsewhere. And Mallorcans, like Serra, greatly resent that. But in the New World, Serra is an ally of Bourbon expansionism, using missions as his way of expanding the Catholic Church. But of course, those meet imperial aims of the Spanish crown to acquire more and more territory in the north and to secure its hold on New Spain.
Describe him physically and give us a sense of what it meant for him to do his work. I mean, you describe a scene in here where he's got this bad leg as a result of the snake bite, I guess, but he'll jump on a mule, ride 80 miles into the middle of what I'm sure people then thought of as nowhere, hang a bell from a tree and ring it like crazy, saying, "Pagans, pagans, all you pagans, come here." I mean, the fire in his belly for this vision was just incredible.
Sarah was a man of sort of an indomitable spirit, and he was a small man, probably 5'1 or 5'2, and he did from his, from about 1749 on, he did have a bad leg. When he arrived in the New World, he disembarked in Veracruz with several dozen other Franciscans, and two of those Franciscans decide to walk to Mexico City.
That's
where going
a long walk.
2.5 weeks through the jungle and through a very, very dangerous and rocky road. And on that journey, he does get bit by an insect that leads to an ulcerated wound. So it's probably not the bite of a serpent,
okay,
but most likely an insect. But what I think is interesting about Sarah and his own body is these Franciscans were at war with their body during their whole life, putting the spiritual ahead of their own corporal needs. And the insect bite is something that in some ways is self-inflicted. Sarah never protected his body from insects or other animals. And like a Franciscan who wanted to sort of model a certain poverty and a certain spiritual distance, he was more than happy, essentially, to have a wound that he could drag around to show how he was combating his own bodily frailties while pushing forward the notion of Christ in the evangelism.
I mean, and he would scourge himself. He would beat a stone into his chest in displays of religious fervor. How did that kind of, I mean, here he comes to California where the Native Americans must have had little or none of that way of looking at the world. How did they come to understand it?
Well, first of all, Sarah was very theatrical in his preaching, certainly in Mexico and possibly in California. He would use a stone to pound his chest. He would whip himself with chains. He would extinguish burning tapers into his own body to simulate sort of the burning of flesh in hell. Now, we don't know if he preached that way in California, because that kind of style of preaching was designed essentially to lead Catholics, people already baptized, who knew Spanish, who knew the basic rudiments of Catholicism, to a more intense practice of their own religion. But in California, he certainly did learn some native languages. He tried to speak in the vernacular. But most likely, Indians saw Sarah by the way he walked, by the way he spoke, by the way he acted, by the way he worked, not so much from the pulpit in long sort of disquisitions about Catholicism.
He transformed the people. Ultimately, there was the devastation of the native people. They transformed the land of California with the livestock that he brought, gave it the look that we ultimately came to see and envision today, that sort of very, very barren with the big trees. Caroline in Broadway, Virginia is calling. Caroline, you're on the air with Stephen Hackel in California. What do you think?
Oh, I find this interesting. I was raised a Catholic from the age of kindergarten on up. I'll be 68 on my birthday this month.
Happy birthday.
I have never heard of, we never studied the Franciscans as far as California. And I find it interesting that he was a papal overseer. I'm black, and I feel like the poor Indians got their land taken away. They didn't have to come across the ocean. They were enslaved where they were. The other thing I wanted to say is that when he was showing off, he wanted to have his faith. But was he trying to get exposed so he could be a martyr?
Carolina, let us pick all that up. Let me get one more call if I could first, because we've got something related here maybe, but we hold your perspective on this. It's important. Camille in Charleston, South Carolina. Camille, you're on the air.
Yes, another plantation state. When I heard the initial story, which I had not heard before because I grew up in the Northeast, mm-hmm. and so stories about California just don't really come our way much, what it sounds like to me is that someone is being considered for sainthood who essentially created a plantation state in California.
Yeah.
The reservations that later developed with the American Indians, I mean, this is a synthesis of what occurred. And when this holy man arrived, you could drink out of the water without becoming ill. You can't now.
Camille, we've got that perspective as well. Stephen Hackel, you're hearing this from Virginia, from South Carolina. People look and say, wait a minute, it looks like enslavement. It looks like a plantation state that emerged out of all this. Your response?
Well, the first thing I would like to say is that Sarah may not be well known outside of California, the Southwest, but his brand of colonization is really the norm for much of the Americas. So we tend to think of our founding fathers in the U.S. as being the Protestant men of the mid-18th century who led 13 colonies to strike as one and create the United States of America.
But and they were in the 13 colonies, but you're looking beyond those.
Beyond, if you, in terms of how Native people encountered Europeans in the Americas, and I'm talking about from the tip of South America all the way north to the northern regions of Canada, most of them encountered either a Franciscan or a Jesuit missionary who was very much like Junipero Serra. So while we may think his history relates just to California, actually, it has a hemispheric dimension, the sort of colonization he represented. But the second point, you know, was California a plantation state? Well, I wouldn't see it that way. And it's a very, very difficult sort of set of issues to unravel. But, you know, if you think of sort of the South with masters and slaves, masters own slaves and they use their own labor to profit directly. California did have, under Sarah, a system of coerced labor, but it wasn't one that worked to the direct benefit of the Franciscans, and it was part of an early modern European view of how people should work. They should work in fields, they should work all day long, and they should work because labor had a morally uplifting element to it, and in California in particular, so people would be at the missions year-round so they could go to Mass and practice a certain form of Catholicism. So, you know, did Indians see themselves as enslaved in California? It's possible they did, but I think from our perspective, there are real differences between the labor system in California under Sarah and other missionaries and what occurred in the Deep South during the colonial period.
But you're very clear that the vision he brought, though this was pretty much contemporaneous with the emergence of the 13 colonies and then the push for independence in the East, his vision in the on the Western Shore was not an Enlightenment vision like that drove the founding fathers we always think of. It was pre-Enlightenment, which is part of this agricultural vision. Get into the system and buckle down, work the earth, kneel to God.
There's no question that it was a pre-Enlightenment version. He didn't believe in democracy or a republican form of government. He really believed in sort of a monarchy, one that had a secular head and one that, of course, that was led by the Pope in Roman Catholicism. He was not a founding father in the same way as our typical founding fathers might be. But nevertheless, what I would argue is that his form of colonization was extremely influential throughout the Americas. And I think in terms of our own national narrative, we need to move beyond just focusing on Thomas Jefferson and George Washington if we really want to understand the colonial origins of our nation and the many stories that shaped the Americas, and in particular, the United States of America.
And most especially as we're looking at ever-growing diversity in this country and bigger and bigger root system coming, recognized in the country out of the California area, out of Mexico, out of Latin America. Stephen Hackel writes about it all in his new book, Junipero Serra. Andy Galvin joins us right now from San Francisco in California. His ancestors were baptized in Serra's time at Mission San Francisco and Mission San Jose. He's descended from Native Americans who came face to face with this potent movement. Andy Galvin, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
How do you look back on this now? I mean, Stephen Hackel writes about this story of the meeting of two cultures, and one definitely got rolled over by the other. You're descended from all that. There's debate over the good father today. Should he be a saint or should he be criticized as Columbus has been criticized? How do you look at it?
First of all, Junipero Serra, in my view, is a saint. He's just yet to be proclaimed one by the Holy Father. And that has taken a lot of review, understanding, research, prayer on my part to come to that conclusion, because yes, I am a native person. I call myself an Indian. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with the I word. Mm-hmm. And my ancestors received the Catholic faith, good, bad, indifferent, at California missions. In my family, the majority of us are still practicing Catholics. That's the strange juxtaposition which we find ourselves in, because at one moment, we may say, when there's a baptism to occur in our family, a marriage, or even a death, we go to the Catholic Church. Often we return to the mission church. However, when we say we have no land, we have lost much of our culture, which we are trying to revitalize at this point, where do we point the finger? And we say because of the Spanish colonial missions that tried to change everything about a California Indian, mm-hmm. we are without some of these things that other tribal groups throughout the country are.
How do you reconcile your feelings? You're clearly a committed Catholic. On the other hand, this mission system in many dimensions resulted in the devastation of your ancestral people.
You stand up and tell the truth. When I was hired at Mission Dolores in San Francisco just about 10 years ago to be the curator, I'm the first Native person whose ancestors were converted to a California mission to be responsible for interpretation of a mission to the general public. Of those 300,000 fourth graders that Steve mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. every year about 30,000 of them, one-tenth, come to Mission Dolores to hear our programs. And so it's interpretation opportunity. I find that from working within the system, you can get more accomplished than standing outside the system, although it's very good also to have those who refuse to come in because they make us who are inside have to respond to them.
But are you, as a practicing California Catholic descended from Native Americans today, saying it was worth the devastation of my people to receive this religious message?
What I'm saying is it was inevitable. If the Spanish didn't come, the French would have come, the British would have come, or the Russian would have come. In the Spanish coming, we got the least of all the evils that could have come. When Mexico Revolution happens, the lands are confiscated from the Indian people. The Spanish were holding the policy, holding the land in trust for the Indians. When the United States of America arrives after statehood, Indians are to be exterminated, and this is from the governor of California at the time, and we're also not citizens of this country until 1924.
When the Yankees showed up and the sort of eastern United States Americans showed up.
Yes, the United mm-hmm. States. Yeah, I always find I would laugh at that when you call me a Native American, then they later say, oh, when the Americans show up,
yeah.
What were these people you call Native? But that's another discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, if you try to survive today, because we can't totally live in the past, we can't change the past, we can learn from the past. And we learn from the past by telling the truth. And so out of the past, is there anything that happened in the California mission that perhaps is something to be celebrated and beneficial? And for me and many of my family, it's the faith that came. Yes, many other things were disastrous. In general, the California missions for Native peoples were an unmitigated disaster. But it's very difficult to try to judge what happened in the late 18th century with our 21st century standards. Earlier, Steve was responding to a question about a plantation system, and did the California missions look like the plantations of the Deep South? Well, it may not, from a historian's view, look like that. It may not from a non-Indian. But if you're a California Indian, and somebody's describing to you, you can never return home, you must learn a new language, you must learn a new religion, you must eat new foods, you did all these other things, you would feel like you're a slave.
Andy Galvin, you're a sophisticated soul, and we appreciate you being with us today, spanning a lot of history, good and bad and very tough there. Thank you for joining us from San Francisco. Stephen Hackel, please stand by in Pasadena. We're talking about California's original architect, imperial priest, Junipero Serra, today. The Eagles sang about that era and its legacy in The Last Resort behind us here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about California's original architect, if you will, imperial priest, if you will, Junipero Serra, and his deep stamp, for better and worse, on America's most populous state. Stephen Hackel, historian at University of California, Riverside, writes about it in his terrific new history, Junipero Serra, California's founding father. We asked on Facebook, do you see California's imperial Spanish history playing out today? How, where? And Manuel writes us, I can see the old Camino Real 101 from where I'm standing, Camarillo, California, as he tunes in. Ed is all praise, says, Father Serra was terrific. What wonderful missions all along California. Franciscan collected money for the American Revolution and sent it to George Washington. Blessed, Junipero was beatified by John Paul II. True, his feast day is July 1st. Says the missionaries worked for humane treatment of the native people. Stephen Hackle, that's kind of the story that has his statue in the Capitol building, Sanctuary Hall in Washington right now, that Ed shares with us there.
Well, that's true. Serra is one of two Californians whose statue is in the Capitol, the other one being Ronald Reagan. And Serra's statue was placed there in 1931 when there was a much less complicated understanding of his past and what he brought to California. And some of the things that Andy just talked about, I think, really weren't widely known in California. California Indians didn't have a strong presence in terms of determining whose statue would be placed in Statuary Hall. But he is, in many ways, an important and potent symbol of the state for many of the reasons we've talked about, because his vision does shape many aspects of contemporary California.
I wish you'd bridge for us from his period into the time when the gold rush and the great move of population from east to west. I mean, you know, for many people, there's transitional understanding between the mission time and that time. And I mean, it boils down. We got a little bit from the 1998 here film Mask of Zorro. Now you say, well, that's not it, but this is kind of commonly, this is what's in the popular mind. You got Zorro, Antonio Banderas. This little bit here, he's forced to pose as a priest and give priestly advice to the devout Elna, played by Catherine Zeta-Jones, daughter of the great Don, the landholder, there in the confessional booth.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been 3 days since my last confession.
Go on.
I have broken the fourth commandment, Padre.
You killed somebody?
No, that is not the fourth commandment.
Of course not. In what way did you break the most sacred of commandments?
I dishonored my father.
That is not so bad. Maybe your father deserved it.
What did you say?
And fantastical fiction, but it goes to that period. What is the bridge period, Stephen, that goes from Father Serra's time to the arrival of the great large populations from the east?
Well, California history has really been collapsed into a period of really two stories. One would be Serra's arrival in California, and then would be the gold rush, when, as some spectators understood, sort of the lights all came on at once, and you had the birth of California as a state. But between those two periods, there is a very long and complicated history of the collapse of the missions with the rise of the Mexican Republic in the 1820s and 30s. And what's so interesting is that the missionaries are sent off as being sort of agents of an outmoded form of Spanish colonization. And the missions do go into decline. But during that very period, we have Indian people who do rise up and who do claim for themselves mission property and do make the argument themselves that they don't need missions, that they can live independently in California, either in their former villages or as independent laborers in pueblos. So there's a very much of a lost history between the 1820s and the 1850s that has not been fully explored by historians yet.
But the Native Americans in California seem somehow to have been so crushed and rolled over. I mean, we think of Plains Indians and many others, and we know their names, we know their history. They still have land associated with them and reservations and status and now casinos. I mean, this Native American population seems to have been so ground down that those claims, that the history and standing almost seems to have been lost.
Well, that's true. In California, there actually are more than 100 federally recognized tribes. But between San Diego and San Francisco, where the missions were most active and most devastating, it's true, most of those Indian groups cannot establish a continuity that dates back to time immemorial, which is necessary to achieve federal recognition. But, I mean, I do think that in California, you do have elements of the survival of Indian culture in the face of what was a horrible colonial storm that did destroy many aspects of Indian culture. But I think what's really important is that, you know, when many people do, whether they're fourth graders or their teachers, visit California missions, there still is a widespread sense that California Indians went extinct during the mission period. But we know this is not true. And at every one of these places where missions were established and where missions are functioning parishes today, there are native people like Andy who do balance off their contemporary views of Catholicism with their understandings of their culture in the past as they try and live today, as their ancestors did, essentially in two worlds.
You know, I've got a lot of family in California. I was out not so long ago in Carmel. The mission there was his, Father Sarah's headquarters, and it's an amazing setting. You can kind of look out over the Pacific from it. And a tourist destination, but also still an active church right there. Abram's calling from New London, Connecticut. Abram, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm from Carmel, and I agree with you there. It's just absolute paradise. And this is, you know, this history that you're recounting is quite familiar from being a Carmel High Padre and from taking those fourth grade trips to nearby missions, San Juan Bautista, Santa Barbara. But, mm-hmm. you know, I became sensitive later to the narrative about this peaceful people whose lives were so disrupted and ended up working in some of the land a little bit to the east of Carmel where they would retreat to, where they had to run away because that prime vista where the mission sits had been taken over and it was no longer safe to live in that sort of abundance. So, you know, in speaking of the two narratives, the two sets of founding fathers, two colonial experiences, there are also these two different native peoples, and the life must have been so different and not in a pejorative way before Sarah entirely. It's still paradise, but there is definitely a paradise lost.
Gigantic change, yes, loss and something new. Abram, thanks for your call. One more right here. Scott in Burlington, Vermont. Scott, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Steve, thank you for this book. So many of the things you're talking about echo, for me, having grown up in the Central Valley of California, and the compression of history that you spoke of is exactly what you dealt with, at least in the 1960s and 70s, growing up, where you had the padres coming in, riding on donkeys, looking like Friar Tuck, behind a group of soldiers. And then the next thing you knew, it was a gold rush. And we lost, growing up, that 200 years of history, 300 years of history, between those key points. And it's just interesting to think of it in the context of who this man was, how tough he was, and how tough his compatriots were in essentially pioneering the American West, and to think about that in what has been lost, in California having once been the savanna of North America with herds of elk and antelope, you know, looking like Ngorongoro Crater in Africa, and native peoples in hundreds and hundreds of cultures laid out north to south, you know, harvesting salmon and taking advantage of the Pacific Flyway, and just the richness of culture and life that was essentially wiped off the face of the earth. And it's important to talk about Father Sarah and to talk about him today, and I think you're absolutely right. We have to consider him as one of our founding fathers of California and of the United States.
From a different strand, but a big one. Scott, I appreciate your call. Let me read from Stephen Hackle. He says, Sarah was a visionary, indefatigable, and unyielding who extended Spain's imperial reach, protected the privileges of the Catholic Church, and ushered in a period of dramatic and even calamitous change for many Indians, especially those of California. For the last, he is regarded by some as a destructive imperialist, yet others see in his life evidence that he was a civilizing pioneer or even a virtuous saint. He's one step from that within the Catholic Church. Stephen Hackle, stand by in Pasadena. I want to bring our friend Ruben Martinez in. He joins us from Oakland, California. Emmy Award-winning journalist, performer, teacher, writes on immigrant life, globalization, boundaries blurred and real and old and new. Professor at Loyola Marymount University, author of Crossing Over and the New Americans and Desert America. Ruben Martinez in California, thanks very much for joining us today. You must know this story incredibly well as a California kid.
Absolutely, Tom. Thank you for having me, and thanks to Stephen for putting this this argument, friendly argument, mostly on the map. I think today, yes, I like you know some of your callers. I grew up. I'm a baby boomer, I suppose. Grew up in the '60s and made dioramas in third or fourth grade of the California Mission and Junipero Serra. At that time, allowed me to think of myself as Spanish rather than Mexican, because at a certain time in California history, the word Mexican was really kind of like a dirty word, and a lot of us who grew up at that time in the '60s, early '70s, we wanted to be anything except Mexican, many of us. And figures like Sarah, that romanticized Spanish past, allowed us to pass as Spaniards.
Yeah. You could kind of jump right over it, imagine yourself as the Spanish Padres kid.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, of course, you know, with all the ferment of radical politics and the revision of history that occurs from the 60s through the 1980s, I become aware that, oh my God, I'm betraying my own people by having, you know, identified with Sarah. And so, you know, we did a 180-degree turn, and then Sarah was the demon, was a demon figure for us.
For the destruction that came along with his work.
Absolutely. And you know, for somebody like me, you know, brown-skinned and Hispanic surnamed, this amounted to a big existential problem, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think where we are at now, and I think Stephen's book is coming out at a great time in the new millennium, well into the new millennium, we've had both sides of the story aired, and I think we're coming to a point where we can embrace the entire history, the tragic, the good, and the bad, and also, I think most importantly, reveal the history that's been erased. You know, we hear about Father Sarah. Father Sarah's shadow is so long that it erases so many other important figures. Maybe we should be talking about Joaquin Murrieta, a bandit of the 19th century, for others a heroic rebel against American imperialism. I lived in New Mexico for quite some time, and in northern New Mexico there's a huge battle over whether we should the figure of Juan de Oñate, explorer, who arrived in the late 16th century up there. And Native Americans right next door to us were saying, no, we got to talk about Popey, the Indian rebel figure who led the Pueblo Revolt of 1680. I think what's really important to note here is that for those of us out here in the West in particular, we live in a region where history is not just a statue, but where history is in our bodies. It's in my body. It's in my voice speaking to you right now.
Yeah.
My name is Ruben Martinez. You know, I'm not Ruben Martinez. I'm Ruben Martinez. And my people, you know, have been around since, at least on one side of my family tree, have been around since before contact between Old and New World. And we're reminded of this every single day when there's an arrival of a Guatemalan Maya immigrant from crossing the border and arriving here, reminding us that history is not just, you know, the mission postcard, the pretty mission postcard, but embodied and lived. It's a living, breathing history.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. Ruben, stand by there for just a second. In Oakland, Stephen Hackel, what about it? I mean, what's the implication? You say, remember, Americans, that the founding fathers don't all look this one way, like the guys standing around the Declaration of Independence. It's a very different picture when you look at the tonsured Father Sarah. It looks sort of like bald John Belushi there. But what's the implication of that? What does it say to our self-understanding to sort of take away the, you know, the blinders and look at the whole? So what, Stephen?
Well, the implication is that our national narrative, as powerful and as cohesive as it has been for our country, really falls short in terms of understanding the depth of diversity in our nation's peoples today and how North America was settled. And I think that by adding figures like Junipero Serra or Juan de Oñate, for better or for worse, into our narrative, we can really get a much broader understanding of the Indian origins of North America, but also the diverse European origins of the settlements that did evolve here. I think we have to move quickly away, I think, from a notion that our national story is one of the formation of our nation state. It's much more complicated than that, because to really get a continental history, we have to move beyond those 13 colonies and look at European settlement and Indian life from Florida all the way across to California.
This somehow abuts right up against the whole immigration debate and our thinking. Robert, one more call in Dover, Massachusetts. Robert, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Sure. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've appreciated the courageous discussion, especially from Andy, who said, we learn from the past by telling the truth.
Yes.
I would challenge us all to really look at the most difficult part of this, which is Father Sarah's perspective, instead of sort of using a chronological snobbery of what he should do if he knew what we know now. Is it possible for us to have the courage to acknowledge that he was really advanced in his acknowledgement of the value of the Indians as real people, and in so many other ways, instead of making a facile condemnation and saying he's responsible for the pollution of rivers and the destruction of an entire way of life.
Well, I take your point, and we'll pick it up right here, though. I don't know how I would feel if some guy, you know, walked in over the Berkshires and told me I had to change my life and my values and whip me if I didn't. But still, what about it, Stephen? Advanced in his view of the world?
I wouldn't use the word advanced. I'd say he was very representative of a whole wave of thousands of missionaries and European explorers and conquerors who came from Western Europe during the early modern period. I think Sarah is not particularly enlightened when it comes to native peoples. He sees them as simply beholden by their superstitions that were inherited from their ancestors. And unfortunately, he takes very little interest, actually, in understanding Indian history or Indian culture. In fact, one of the Indians who he knows best is a young Indian boy named Juan Evangelista, who he takes to Mexico City in the 1770s when he returns there to meet with the viceroy. And it's after knowing Juan for many years, having baptized him, having confirmed him in Mexico City, that it's only upon the return voyage, after years of companionship, that he says to this young Indian boy, "What do you believe about spirituality? What do your ancestors, what did they believe? And what do you think about our religion?" Sarah was not an ethnographer or an anthropologist in any way.
He was a man on a mission. Ruben, what do you say about sainthood? It's out there for this man. What do you say?
I think Pope Francis has a dilemma now, you know, given that all this has been talked about. I will say just in closing here that...
10 seconds,
really,
Ruben, sorry.
It's really quite ironic that we're talking about this when the fact is, demographically, that the figure of Sarah, he's a ghost, right? Where are the descendants of Sarah today?
Ruben, we're out of time right there. Ruben Martinez, always great to have you. Stephen Hackel, Junipero Serra is the history... And it is a fascinating one. Thank you for joining us, sir. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.